Welcome to Day Zero Update for August 3rd, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew is, I believe, Dan Ribas and Evo.
Yep.
Doing work stuff and whatnot. Hopefully we'll have them back for next week, but for the time being, we do have plenty of things to talk about.
Yep.
Nintendo Partner Direct.
Mm-hmm.
And, with some announcements. Not a ton, but there's stuff there. We have an update on your big, controversy of the past couple of weeks with the big payment processor story.
Yep.
Kind of happening. And we also have just a number of other things here, some acquisitions and lawsuits and a bunch of other stuff happening here. But yeah, before we get to that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some Ninja Gaiden Ragebound. I got the PS5 version.
Yep.
Seems like the Switch version is not a good version. Because it runs, I believe, at 30 frames per second. Maybe runs more steadily on Switch 2, but from what I've seen, people say that version runs weird enough that it could be nauseating for people. So it seems like your best bet on that is anywhere else. At least until they're able to release a proper Switch 2 version, but for the time being. So yeah, this is a new Ninja Gaiden game, 2D action platformer, I would call it. It really doesn't feel like the other games all that much, which I think is, for me, a benefit. It's not super heavy duty on combos and that kind of stuff. In fact, you're kind of more focused on dispatching enemies as quickly as possible, usually with one hit or whatever you can do, or you can just run past a lot of them if you want. But yeah, it features a different character named Kenji, who is sort of training with Ryu at the beginning of the game and deals with this attack on the village and goes out to fight the demons that have done so and try to stop them at their source. And kind of ends up getting tricked into running to this, lair of the demons, something like that. At which point it switches over to another character. I forget her name is like Kimura or something. She is a shinobi for the Spider Clan that is sort of the rival to Ryu's clan, the Hayabusa clan.
Yep.
She has ranged attacks mainly. Like throw knives at enemies. And you fight a lot of the same ones, but that takes place probably around the same time as the beginning parts with Kenji. And so I believe the way the story goes, you're fighting your way out of this to protect, the higher-ups in your clan, and then eventually you work your way towards fighting the demons and in the same place as Kenji. Whose souls get bound together, and then you're able to kind of switch between them to use their different move sets. And that makes up for an interesting way to go, because you got one character that's, melee focused, one that's ranged focused, some different abilities to them. That makes for a nice thing. I have not gotten to the point where they merge together, but it's been pretty fun so far. It does have some accessibility options, so you can tone down some of the damage you take, that kind of stuff. That is something you want to do. Those are a handful of other options you can mess with. But for the time being, I'm going at it in the natural difficulty so far. But yeah, been enjoying it. Every stage has three challenges to them, as well as there's some collectibles in each stage. That you can use to buy. At least the one I know so far that I can buy is These badges, I guess you could call them. They're similar to like the Hollow Knight badges. You can equip two of them. And so I have one that's essentially every time I get to a checkpoint, it'll refill my health all the way instead of, you know, a chunk of the way.
Yeah.
I forget what the other one is, but you get to buy a bunch of these. And some of them will make the game harder.
Yeah.
That way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It looks really nice. It has some great movement abilities. Because you have a, I forget what they call it, but it's essentially like a spin attack that you use on enemies that can get you essentially like a double jump kind of thing. There's that. There's the ability to climb up on walls and even on ceilings, which for the kind of Super Nintendo era of games that this evokes, mm-hmm. I still don't ever expect to be able to climb up on the ceilings when I do. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. This is definitely a game people should check out if you like your action platformer stuff. Maybe also if you're into your Ninja Gaiden stuff. So yeah, that's a strong game. Also been playing some more Donkey Kong Bonanza. I'm in the third world now as I'm working my way around. Visually, it's not a great looking world. It's like a desert. Dirt kind of world, so lots of brown and red kind of stuff, so that's maybe the one knock I have on this, the way this area looks, but
mm-hmm.
It's the first one with minecarts, so that's interesting to jump into, and it has, you know, a bunch more bananas and fossils and such to collect, so I'm working my way around on that stuff, so that's been a lot of fun. I started a game called 64. This is a Steam game. Sort of in the clicker slash idle genre. Maybe a bit of an automation sort of game to it. You essentially start, it's a weird game to describe, but essentially you start with this machine that you hold the button, you know, the mouse button down on, and it'll generate these cubes all around it in sort of a, you know, 3x3 grid. And then you click on those to break them and you get a currency out of that. And once you do that, you click and hold on it again, bring up more, and keep doing that. And eventually you'll unlock a second currency. You kind of keep going through that. And as you go, you unlock some stuff on the right side of the screen that are sort of these buildings and machines and such that you can build around it to make the clicking easier. That kind of stuff. Now where I'm at, I have ones I'm using that will essentially hold the machine down so that it keeps spawning new cubes. And another one that will, on the other side, that will cool it down so it makes it bring them up twice as fast, and then I have machines around the edges that will essentially break the cubes kind of thing, so you're kind of just consistently getting these currencies, and I think I have three of them right now. There's like a yellow, purple, and a red one that I'm working my way through. And while you're doing all this, on the bottom left side, you're getting this like text change between like your character and a buddy that they're texting, and they're arranging to hang out, and everybody's like, oh yeah, can't wait for you to get over here. And then generally, I think when you get a new, either like machine to unlock or a new currency unlock, it updates the story with more stuff, where eventually like your character is like, or the buddy is like, hey, where the hell are you? You're supposed to be over here. And you're like, oh, I'm coming. I just got some stuff to do, kind of thing, as you're like still playing the game. This whole weird thing where apparently your character has been brought into another universe or something, another world. So you've just disappeared, and the only contact you have with the outside world is with this buddy. And they're trying to help you out and all that. So that's where I'm at, just like I'm trying to figure out what's going on. So yeah, it's a weird little game, but not one that's all that expensive. It's like $6.
Mm.
I got it during the summer sale a few weeks ago, so took it into it. I got it almost to the point where it's automated, and I guess I can expand the operations a bit. You basically pay for more of these extractor kind of things to deal with it and build the same thing over and over again, I guess. So I've got machines that'll convert currency into other currency and all that. So yeah, it's a weird little game. Not sure how much more I'm going to play, but I've been enjoying it so far. It's just like a thing to put on for a little bit. So there's that. And then let's see, the last one here. I've been playing more Soulstone Survivors, which hit 1.0 last month, I believe, or in June. That I'm enjoying. One of the more noticeable things they've added is the a new tutorial that is sort of story based, featuring a lot of the characters that you can unlock, sort of working together to try to take down the Void King kind of thing. Which I was working on playing through that mission. It seemed to suggest if I didn't do it right there, I was never going to get the option to play it again. Mm. So I was like, sure, whatever. And, you know, it has a lot of voice acting and story stuff going on. And you sort of get your group of heroes together and go to fight one of the Void King, either the Void King or one of his lackeys or something. And maybe if I would won, but it felt like it was a Souls, you know, an intro Souls boss that just will eventually kill you. And then that's where everything starts. It kind of kicks you back out to the menus. And I was like, so did I lose all my stuff that I had before from the early access? And I found out, like, oh, it's all there. So I have a few characters unlocked. Maybe had like 5 hours in this game before the 1.0 hits. And I put a few more hours since then. Enjoying it. But yeah, this is, in comparison to like Vampire Survivors, which has just one currency really, and you're kind of just looking at the challenge unlocks to see what you have next to do. This one is all about grinding out these various currencies that you use for the skill tree, for unlocking characters, and for doing, you know, upgrading weapons and doing all this different stuff. So you're kind of doing these runs that are fairly similar, without really like a ton of concrete things that you're going to get out of it, besides just the currency. So yeah, it's a little bit nebulous sort of what's going on here. Because these kind of games, I really wish you could have like a list of the challenges you want to follow and sort of get updated on as you're progressing towards them, or things like in the skill tree you want to focus on and all that. So it doesn't have any of that. So you're just kind of like, oh, I gathered a bunch of stuff. I'll see what I can use it on. See if there's anything interesting. I'm working on my way to upgrading the main skill tree. There's a main skill tree. And then I believe once you fill that up, you unlock the ability to do skill trees for individual characters. So you're kind of working your way through all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's still enjoyable and all that. The main conceit so far has been just picking one of the areas, one of the handful of maps that it has, running around, beating up enemies. Usually you're just killing a bunch of enemies to get these bosses to show up. And after, I think, 5 of the bosses, you're done with that area. You can either leave and quit. You can do an infinite version of that area. So I guess if you have certain currencies you want to unlock a bunch of, that'd be a way to do it. Or you can go to essentially like this gladiatorial arena where you need to kill a bunch of elite enemies to unlock the next boss. and then you have to do that 5 times. You can kind of just keep doing that over and over again. I think it gets a little more tough. But yeah, it's kind of one of those, probably one of the better games in this genre. But yeah, I've been enjoying it a good bit. Looking forward to play some more of this, but yeah, not really a ton to stay on it just yet. There's a side mode. I don't know when they added this. It seems to be Cthulhu themed. At least that's the icon they're using for the mode. So yep. I assume there's some weird stuff going on there. But yeah, that's Soulstone Survivor. That's also on consoles now. They added that a little while ago. So I may grab that one on PS5 or something, but for now, I'm going to stick with the Steam version and see how it goes. But yeah, this is one of the games that has like 400 achievements on Steam. So it's just like, I'll just grind out achievements, see what else happens here. It has a bunch for like, you know, killing a bunch of elite enemies at different tiers. So yeah, it's one of those games. So yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I, among other things, I started playing Baldur's Gate 3 again because I decided, you know what, it's time. I might as well get started again. And, you know, it didn't take long. Just sucked me right back in again. I keep forgetting just how amazing that game really is. And it is pretty much the desert island game. If you only had one game to play for the rest of your life, it would probably be this one because there's just so many different things they shoved into it. But on top of that, I also have been playing Void Stranger again on my PC because I had been talking a lot about Zero Ranger, and I was like, you know what? It had been a while since I'd played Void Stranger, which was made by the same developers. And yeah, that game gets incredibly, you know, bang your head against the wall hard later on, because the essential conceit of the game and its gameplay is, you know, you're in this sort of ruins or underground ruins or tomb or whatever, and you're going down these stairs from floor to floor, going deeper and deeper. And in every room is essentially a puzzle. Well, most every room. There's some others too, but that are based around the idea of you have the power. You can only move like one tile at a time, you know, up, down, left, or right. And you have the power to remove a tile from one area and then place it on an empty area where there's like a pit or something, and you can use that to cross the pit and get to the exit. But later on, they start throwing a bunch of other curveballs at you. Things like, suddenly you've got these monsters you have to deal with, like, these snakes that, move the same time you move, you know, back and forth one space at a time, or the grubs that move the same you do one space at a time, except they go up and down, or the bulls, which are essentially will charge you on sight if you're on the same like line of tiles that they're on, and you can kind of bait them around, but they will eventually get to you, and stuff like that. And then they throw in some like other stuff that you didn't realize you could do, but you absolutely could do and always could have, you just didn't think about it, which is that if there is a particular one of the things that they add on later on is this button for a bunch of these puzzles where you have to place something on top of the button and the button will open up the door that's covering up the staircase. And this will involve anything from like a statue to a boulder, you know, that kind of thing. But there are a lot of rooms where you can't have any of that. Instead, you have to find a way to trick one of the monsters to get onto it. And that can involve everything from baiting them onto the button to trying to time your movements so that one of the monsters will go onto the button the same time you are. And eventually you'll find out that because the button itself technically rests on a tile, you can actually take up that tile, button and all, and you can place it in an empty spot where you can actually you know, move a monster over there, and that will open up, you know, the thing for you. There's also like a bunch of other hidden stuff that's just like really cool. every time you save the game, what happens is every, like, I think like every 28 floors or so, you come across this birch tree that will be, it's just like a room with like a singular birch tree under it. And if you go there, that's where you save the game. And when the game saves, it actually turns the game off. And when you go back into the game, it'll open up and it'll be like this dream sequence where you'll get like more of your character's past story. It's actually really fascinating. It's just that game just has so many cool things for it. It's just also incredibly difficult. But probably the one game I've been most addicted to this week is a free game that I was turned on to on itch.io, and we will be talking about itch.io a little later on. It's called Social Democracy: An Alternate History. And essentially what it is it's a card-based politics simulator where you are playing the Social Democratic Party of Germany from 1928 to 1933, and your primary objective is to make sure that Adolf Hitler does not come to power. And the game kind of hammers home the idea that, in hindsight, Hitler's rise to power was almost a foregone conclusion because the Weimar system was incredibly screwed up pretty much on by design. Because when, you know, Franz von Papen, who'd been the dictator of Germany during the latter half of World War I, and, you know, Kaiser Wilhelm II all decided to abdicate and give the people their republic, they essentially sabotaged it because they were extremely petty on the way out. But anyway, the game starts 1928. It's when the Social Democratic Party gets a huge chunk of the votes in the Reichstag. And depending, you know, starting out, how much support you're able to get, you will then be given a bunch of things you can do. You will almost certainly have to form a coalition. Usually this involves starting out the game. It involves a grand coalition where you're essentially trying to form a coalition with all of the major parties in the Reichstag at that particular point. The Nazis are not there. They are barely a blip on the radar at that point. So you're mostly having to do with like the German Democratic Party, the Liberals, the Center Catholic Party, you know, guys like that. And also technically the Communists, and we'll get to them, but and you generally are then in turn, you're like, you can then, you know, decide who's going to be prime minister, because, you know, you'll have like the plurality of votes in the Reichstag. Generally people who I give advice to who play this game, you're going to want to get, the guy who's, the head of the Catholic Center Party to, you know, be prime minister or chancellor, because you're going to want to have that leverage so you can then put, you know, SPD members into various ministries. You know, you can do things like, you know, Ministry of Labor, Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of Justice, the Reichswehr, you know, that's the German military, stuff like that, Ministry of Justice, all that type of stuff. And then after that happens, for, you know, the next several months, you're essentially, you know, running Germany. You're, you know, trying to, you know, you're doing like coalition deals, you're, you know, enacting various policies through the various ministries the party controls, which can include things like, you know, increasing welfare spending, you know, enacting, like, if you get a guy in agriculture, you get, like, a national buyout law that lets, like, the government buy, like, unused or unprofitable farming land and give it over to public control. Get involved in, like, labor disputes. And on top of that, you're also dealing with, like, you know, intra-party stuff, like funding and where the money's going to go, you know, campaigning, giving political rallies, putting money into the Reichsbanner, which is the SPD's paramilitary. And then 1920 happens and the Great Depression happens, and then everything goes to hell in a handbasket. And at that point, you're essentially scrambling, trying to juggle like a million plates at once while, the young plan is getting offered and the banking system collapses and that stupid little Austrian dude with the weird mustache is getting more and more popular with the people because essentially the Reichshagen itself is just failing at what it does. And it's not a difficult game or even really that complicated of a game. It's just that unless you are interested in history and especially, the modern history of Germany, the subject matter can be a little esoteric, which is why, the game actually has like an encyclopedia or a glossary that sort of tells you like, okay, these are the various parties. This was the ones who led the party, the ones in leadership. This was their policies. This gives you like a simulation of like what the major elections look like, that kind of thing. It's called Social Democracy and Alternate History. It's on itch.io. It's completely free. I've quite enjoyed it, but that's what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news.
Mm-hmm.
First up here, we got your PlayStation Plus Essential lineup for the month,
mm-hmm.
Which has some interesting games. This will be starting on the 5th, August 5th. Mm-hmm. First up here, we have Lies of P for PS5 and PS4.
Mm-hmm.
The acclaimed Souls-like featuring... sort of a version of Pinocchio, mm-hmm. in sort of a Bloodborne style world.
Mm-hmm.
Very good one of these. So definitely worth checking out for that. So there you go. For PS4, there's DayZ.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly popular, zombie survival game,
mm-hmm.
That is server based. So you're occasionally able to work with and fight against other people. Trying mm-hmm. to do the same thing and all that. So, yeah, there's that. And the last one here for the PS4, My Hero 1's Justice 2.
Mm-hmm.
This is the second 3D arena fighter in the My Hero Academia universe.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that one's probably pretty solid. But, there's your lineup with mm-hmm. Lies of P being the headline game here. So, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, definitely gonna give Lies of P a shot. Like that's been a game that's been on my radar for a while. It's just I got kind of burned out on Souls like so. But yeah, that I'll definitely be giving that one a shot when it comes out when it's put on PS Plus Tuesday.
Yeah. So there you go. Let's see. And next up, Nintendo Switch Online got its own release for the week,
mm-hmm.
Which is one people have been waiting for a while.
Oh, yeah.
This is Mario Paint for the Super Nintendo.
Yep.
Which on the Switch 2 allows you to use the Joy-Cons in mouse mode.
Yeah.
For this. And on the Switch 1, you need a USB mouse to plug in.
Mm-hmm.
Or one with a little USB dongle, mm-hmm. something like that. But yeah, this was a game that I had back in the day on the Super Nintendo. It was a very weird release because it came with a mouse.
Yep.
And all that. And a mouse pad.
Mm-hmm.
And it made for a really interesting game. But I don't know that I ever really messed too much with the art stuff.
No.
Which was largely like a version of MS Paint. Mm-hmm. For the day. It's mostly like the little mini games with the mouse and fly swatter, if you know that from WarioWare.
Yep. That's
where that came from. And also the music maker, which was also a really cool part of it.
Yeah, so. that music maker had a long ass lifespan. Like you can still find people using the music maker on that thing to this day on YouTube.
Yeah. I think that's makes me really wish they would do a follow-up and not like make it, like a modern music maker kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
But just allow you to have like more ability to save stuff and export it as, MP3s and all that kind of features. They get a more modern, fleshed out version of this whole thing. So yeah, that's a game that's well worth checking out if you have Nintendo Switch Online. And alongside that, they've also put the soundtrack on Nintendo Music on that app. So if you want to just listen to the good music, that's thing you can do. So yeah, there you go. Fun little part of Nintendo's Super Nintendo history.
Yep.
So yeah, we do have some other Nintendo news that has happened as of today. It seems like Nintendo announced that they were going to be increasing prices on hardware for the Nintendo Switch 1. The different models there. I can double check the store at this point. Because I think Target accidentally posted prices early when this was announced. So let me see here. Hardware. What kind of hardware we got here? Switch 2 stuff. Let me see. Okay, yeah. The Switch OLED model is now $399 instead of $349. The Switch Lite is $229. Instead of $199, and the regular Switch is now $339 instead of $300. And I think the bundles they have here are probably also bumped up a bit. I believe the Alarmo clock has been bumped up from $100 to $109. So yeah, the Pro controller is $80 now. The regular one. Not sure if these Joy-Cons changed at all. I believe the Joy-Con 2 controllers have increased in price from, let me see what they're at right now. Yeah, they're $100. From $95 to $100. Was very expensive. The Pro Controller 2 went from $85 to $90. I think the cameras was 50, and now it's 55. So yeah, the Switch 2 is normal. The GameCube controller is now $69.99 instead of $65. So yeah, a lot of these got bumped up by $5 or so for that. So yeah, they're dealing with tariffs, especially as Trump's latest round have started or are about to start for many countries. And so, yeah, they were talking about this for Canada, and now the U.S. is getting it as well. So people are weirdly blaming Nintendo for this, so them getting greedy, and it's like, that's not what's going on here at all. They don't want to charge more for these things if they don't have to. But you know, Trump and his stupid tariffs are forcing their hand. With all this, so yeah, even the amiibos might have gone up.
Yeah,
a lot of these are saying $20 for them, and I'm like, I don't think that was the original price, but yeah, that's more fun. Gotta pay $20 for a Goomba.
Yeah,
in this economy. So yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah, I believe like all the NSO controllers have gone up. The 64 controllers $55 now. Super Nintendo controller is $35, which is probably a very reasonable price for that. But yeah, that's unfortunate. I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
I mean, it was kind of to be expected because of all the tariff bullshit, but it still sucks.
Yeah.
Just means they're going to have to shell out more cash for Christmas this year.
Yeah. But yeah, it's especially when you see a lot of people online are blaming the wrong people for this. Because yeah, they should know that if you voted for Trump, this is what you voted for. So yeah, we'll have to see how this goes. But yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, let's see what else we got here. Also happening on Tuesday. We got Konami announcing a Weekend in Live broadcast, which they're saying is going to be an hour and a half, which is plenty of time to disappoint every Suikoden fan for whatever they're going to announce here. So it'll be at 4 a.m. Pacific time, 7 a.m. Eastern time, and I believe later in the evening in Japan, where they're probably primarily announcing stuff. We'll see. Yeah, they already put out the remaster earlier this year for 1 and 2. Maybe they'll do more of that. But they probably also talk about the mobile game Starleap that is also coming out at some point for PC and mobile. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what else they might. Maybe they'll do remasters of 3 and 4, which I believe are probably the two least liked games in the franchise.
Yeah.
At least among the mainline ones.
Yeah.
I believe 5 is the other good one.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, and 5. It'll just suck it up and put those all in a trilogy package. And then you can charge $60 for that and get more money out of people. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to see what they're going to do with all this. So there you go. Your latest little tease of Suikoden news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it just, I swear, I really don't know if these guys know what to do with this franchise anymore.
Yeah.
Just straight up.
Well, they're making a mobile game, so they're doing a lot of Japanese companies do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll find out what their plans actually are.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some other games that have gotten dates. We know that Slime Rancher 2 is going to be out September 23rd. It'll be hitting 1.0 on PC and be out on Xbox and PlayStation 5 on the same day. So yeah, that'll be interesting. They have physical editions they've announced.
Mm-hmm.
One through IM 8-bit for $35. You get some special artwork. What else here? Poster, some slime stickers, and an exclusive sleeve. So, some cool stuff there. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I like the first game a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very fun one of those kind of crafting survival games with a unique hook of essentially farming these slimes for other delicious gems. And building those nice little containers for them with where if you filled up too many of them, they could literally climb up on each other and get out.
Mm-hmm.
They also had the hook of, in certain areas, if they started cross breeding enough, they would start turning into the dark slime that could kill everything. They had to be careful and get out of the area when those were going nuts. But yeah, this one, I believe, has more of a, let's see, yeah, you're on Rainbow Island, and you have this big, like, facility for doing all this stuff in, versus the original game, where you kind of just had that little nook area. But I believe you were able to kind of buy your way into other areas with some more things to do. I don't know that I ever really got too far into it in that way, but yeah, looking forward to this. This is a September release. We have another September release here with Hotel Barcelona.
Yep.
A little project between White Owls and Cult Games. The Swery 65 and Suda 51 working together on this game.
Yep.
As, yeah, they call it a deranged blend of horror, action, and grindhouse aesthetics. You basically go into this hotel turned slaughterhouse kind of thing.
Yeah, that basically sounds like something they would make.
Yeah.
And it actually looks really cool too.
Yeah. Got a really nice look to it. It's a Metroid-y kind of game, I believe. So yeah, that looks really nice. Also has co-op play. So you can play with up to 4 players to do some multiplayer stuff, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, that looks really nice. Yeah, with EVO going on, we got some dates for fighting game stuff. The main one here, Virtua Fighter 5 Revo World Stage. is the 1.0 release of what's been on Steam, but also for PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and Switch 2 at some point. It's October 30th. Switch 2 is a later thing. Steam, it's a free upgrade. I believe you had the PS4 version of the Virtua Fighter 5 Ultimate Showdown for PS4. Mm-hmm. You can upgrade for $10 with all the DLC carrying over. There's a 30th anniversary edition of this for $49.99 or $49.49. That includes a bunch of DLC with it. The Yakuza series pack, a legendary pack, and a 30th anniversary swimsuit costume set, just in case you need to be reminded, this is a Japanese fighting game. They're going to give you a swimsuit pack. So, but the regular price for this is $20, which seems like a very good price for this game. Especially being a game that's been worked on for the better part of 20 years.
Yeah.
But they just kind of keep updating and upgrading and putting on new platforms.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of the reason they're doing this is because, you know, they're trying to remind people, especially in the West, that Virtua Fighter is, you know, a thing. Because they're, you know, they're working on Virtua Fighter 6 right now as we speak, and they're trying to revive the franchise over here, you know, outside of like hardcore fighting circles. And, you know, also reminding people that, yeah, it's not just a game that you can sometimes play in Yakuza. It's an actual thing.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I'm cool to find it. It's cool to find it because it is, Virtua Fighter 5 is still a pretty great game. So,
yeah. What else is mentioned here? Pre-orders get you a Sega Genesis customization item based on the hardware. Yeah, they introduce a new mode called World Stage, a single-player mode where you battle through tournaments around the world, and legendary real-life players will appear as CPU opponents, so that's neat. And Dural will join the game as a playable fighter through paid DLC, so not even with the game. And they make sure to note that you cannot use Dural in official tournaments, so unsurprising. But yeah, it looks like it's a pretty good package there. And let's see, our last date here is for one of the weirder games that is happening, Toxic Crusaders, that is coming out December 4th for $24.99 on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. From developer Retroware. Yeah, just seems like a pretty solid beat 'em up, featuring the Toxic Crusaders characters and such. Yeah, which looks neat for that. So yeah, nice to see.
Yeah, they're I think they're doing this partly to sort of coincide with the wide release of the new Toxic Avenger movie. And also to try and, you know, bring up some nostalgia about the Toxic Crusaders, which one of those weird instances where a movie that was rated a very hard R somehow ended up getting a children's cartoon.
I feel like that was a pretty common thing in the 80s.
Weird. Yeah, I don't. And I always found it weird how nobody ever questioned it.
Yeah, like RoboCop and some of those kind of shows.
Yeah, like RoboCop, you know, like you've seen the original RoboCop, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, not exactly what you would consider fodder for a children's cartoon, and yet, that's exactly what they did, and it apparently did really well.
So much so it influenced the sequels.
Yeah. And then, like, there was that. I know for a fact they tried to get, like, an Alien cartoon made. And I also know that, yeah, I'm kind of blanking at the moment, but I know there were others.
Yeah. Trying to see what I can find here. Let's see. Yeah, these are just trying to show me movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a thing that you can check out in December.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get to some industry news. Particularly the Switch 2. We have some details on its first month of numbers, which is that it has sold 5.82 million units, in its first month through June 30th, which is very good. A sign of sort of how much they got ahead of things on the supply side. Because it is the fastest selling console in the industry's history.
Yeah.
Which is probably mostly because it was the most available.
Yep.
So
they kind of, they did somehow manage to like get out in front of this, of the scalpers on this one.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that, 8.67 million software were sold during the, that time frame. This, let's see. Yeah. Mario Kart World is the best selling first party game, as you would expect. 5.63 million units. So basically there's like 190,000 Switch 2s that don't have Mario Kart World. And that's like kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people got the bundles and then others paid the $80 for that. So yeah, that thing is off to a great start. So yeah, that's your Switch news. So we'll see how that goes over the next couple months
as yeah.
more games come out.
Because so far, it's somehow managed to beat the every other system curse for Nintendo so far.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. Let's see, we got some more Evo news. Sony gave a final name for Project Defiant, their wireless fight stick. And it's being called the Flex Strike Wireless Fight Stick. That'll be out next year. Yeah, it'll be shown off at the Evo, the Fight Stick Museum, and the Arc System Works booth. Yeah, they've given us a bunch of details on this. It has a simultaneous PlayStation Link audio, so you can listen to audio through that thing with either the Pulse Elite wireless headset or the Pulse Explore wireless earbuds for some ultra low latency audio and voice chat experience stuff. Seems like this will come with an updated PlayStation Link USB adapter that is compatible with USB-C ports. It allows you to connect two of these together through the USB adapter for couch play or cooperative play. Yeah, you can also, it says you can keep your DualSense wireless controller on the PS5 connected at the same time as the Flex Strike. If you like to use it as additional controller for navigating menus between fights, it has adjustable controls. It has the same control inputs on the DualSense controller. I think even like a touchpad on there as well. There are customization options here. You can switch directional inputs with a built-in lever mode switch or lock in the layout and prevent accidental inputs during a match with a dedicated lock button. Yeah, you can. If you just connected to your PS5, a quick press of the PlayStation button can also wake the console once synced.
Yep.
I believe it also has the gates for the arcade stick there. On the underside, you can essentially swap them out pretty easily. So you can have, you know, the round one, the octagonal, or the hexagonal, I think it is. You can swap those out pretty easily. Depending on the game that needs it. So I believe it also comes with a sling carry case. So if you need to take it around, they give you a little fancy case to put it in, which looks neat. So yeah, seems like it could be a pretty solid fight stick for people that need one for PS5 and PC.
Definitely. And it even looks comfortable to use.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the way it's designed. It looks nice and ergonomic.
Yeah.
And also like the way the buttons are arranged. It looks a lot. It doesn't look like you have to like form like a weird claw hand in order to use them.
Yeah. Like the only thing I've seen people complain about is no leverless option.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is like, yeah, I'm sure if this does well, they'll do that. But doing that and this at the same time seems like a good way to ensure nobody buys it. I don't know. Use people, but yeah. There you go. That looks like that'll be neat. We do have some more Sony news here as we they have sued Tencent over the game we talked about. It was either last year or earlier this year, Light of Modorum.
Yeah.
They announced that very much looks like, oh, you saw how Horizon Zero Dawn looks, and you're like, what if we do that as a free-to-play game?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even subtle. Like, they've got literally, like, everything. The pseudo, like, post-apocalyptic caveman look, the giant robotic dinosaurs and animals roaming the place, the greenery, the, like, weird sort of blown out futuristic building showing up in the, you know, out in the wild where like nature's taken over. Even the character looks a lot like her. Like,
yeah.
Damn, that talk about a bunch of hacks.
Yeah. And I saw that the document itself went up and people looked through it. And yeah, they mentioned that. Tencent contacted Sony at some point, last year or the year before, that they wanted to get the license for Horizon to make a a new game that would be set in the East, and Sony turned that down. I imagine they were also working on their own live service Horizon game. Or about to. They didn't want to have multiples of those. And sort of Sony seeing this, it seems like they also earlier this year contacted Tencent to figure out what's going on here, and ended up getting Tencent asking again to get the license to avoid any legal trouble here, which seems like the aspect of this, like, oh, even they seem to realize that maybe they're barking up the wrong tree on this, the thing they're making, setting themselves up for an easy lawsuit, and that seems like that has happened. So, yeah. This is very much the about Light of Modorum encroaching on the Horizon IP with a lot of this design stuff. It really doesn't have all that much in common with the Nintendo lawsuit over what was that game called? I forget what the Pokemon Guns game. But yeah, this seems like it's going to be an interesting thing to follow. I could definitely see Tencent trying to find a way to settle this, though I think it's part of Sony's thing would either require a huge overhaul of the game or shutting it down. So I don't know if that's going to work for Tencent, but I've seen people try to hit this as like Sony going after the little guy, and it's like Tencent's way bigger than Sony. This is a company that owns a lot of companies, other developers and such, and has their hands in a lot of other companies' stock in a way that Sony is not anywhere close to them. So, yeah. This will be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see because, for one thing, you got a Japanese and a Chinese company basically going at each other here. And that is definitely going to raise some eyebrows. But also it's just going to show, like, you know, the strength of IP protection laws, you know, both inside and outside of China.
Yeah.
Especially if Tencent is intending to, like, make this, like, a globally accessed product. If this was just a China-only product, they probably would not have much of a case to work with. Simply because, you know, Chinese law doesn't really respect IP protection necessarily in that manner, and basically every country and business that does Business with China knows that that's basically part of the deal. But the fact that they're actually trying to make this like a something they want to release globally, that's going to be the real source of conflict here.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see how this stuff is dealt with in the courts.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. The thing you assumed was going to happen when that game got announced has happened.
Yep.
Mostly because Tencent did not want to avoid it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. And our last story here before we get to some of these other stuff, Atari has announced a new acquisition. Mm-hmm. They've acquired the Thunderful Group. They've acquired 82% of the outstanding shares and votes of Thunderful Group for approximately 4.5 million euros, which is about $5.2 million in the U.S. So this was a company that was going to be one of the big indie publishers. They owned the SteamWorld teams. They bought the Lost and Random developer Zoinks, I think it is. They published Islanders, Vampire's Fall, and some other stuff. They were hoping to be a big indie publisher and seemingly stretched themselves way too thin and had to cancel a bunch of projects as a bunch of their releases did not sell well in such a way that just bombed hard for them, which is a shame because, like, for as good as the SteamWorld games were, I believe the vast majority of the people that worked on those games no longer works there because they were ones that got shuttered when I think Heist 2 that released last year did not do well, and so that team no longer exists. Just kind of a huge failure in this whole company coming to exist. Unfortunately, Atari probably is a better company to own all of that stuff, as far as they've been running things for the past few years. They've been basically making a lot of smart acquisitions and not trying to push anybody to be anything more than they should be, with like Digital Eclipse just continuing to do more retro collections and some of that. So this gives them at least some publishing expertise for Europe that helps them out there for any physical publishing and whatnot that they're doing over there. So that seems like a solid pickup for Atari, and hopefully they can do some of these properties justice for how poorly the Thunderful Group was run. So yeah, there you go.
Yep. Put on Atari.
Yep. Let's get to our next section here, which I've called the payment processor problem.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we've kind of hinted at this over the last couple of weeks, but it really became like a big deal over the last week as, you know, the implications of all of this sort of percolated throughout the digital populace. And we started to realize, this is some bullshit, and they're basically gaslighting people into doing this shit. And when we say they, we're talking to about a very specific group of people, Chris is going to tell us about really quickly.
Yeah. Collective Shout. We talked about them before. They have sort of come forward and taken credit for this stuff and has also done that again.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, they claim that they were raising their objection to rape and incest games on Steam for months and were ignored.
Mm-hmm.
So they approached payment processors because Steam did not respond to them.
Mm-hmm.
And did the same to Itch for the same reasons. And that's not great. But it has prompted Itch has kind of had to cobble together their response to all of this stuff as they go, because they're not a super huge team like Steam has been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they post their non-exhaustive list of prohibited themes present in card processing networks that they are unable to support the sale of any works containing these topics. Non-consensual content, real or implied, underage or barely legal themes, incest or pseudo-incest content, bestiality or animal-related, rape, coercion, or force-related, sex trafficking implications, revenge porn, voyeur, and hidden cam, and fetish involving bodily waste or extreme harm, e.g. Yeah. scat, vomit.
Yeah.
And it's like, they say developers can appeal of individual bans, but with thousands of listings removed, mm-hmm. someone would need to actually play these games to adjudicate the claims.
Yeah.
That's very much a thing that's not going to be fixed anytime soon.
No.
To say here, it's almost impossible to come up with an exhaustive list of unacceptable products to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So often we have to take content reviews one at a time. If an issue arises with your account that isn't already covered by our policy, then we will contact you and share what options you may have.
Mm-hmm.
Steam's kind of just found the stuff more easily and banned that stuff, whereas this is nuking pretty much everything that had the not safe for work tag on them, though I think some games managed to slip past that and others got its got the delisting without having that tag. So yeah, these are kind of intentionally vague guidelines that probably come directly from what the payment processors have as a list of things of that they don't want to be running through them. So yeah, this is sad to see, but was not the end of what we saw here. As I mentioned last week, people were very much fighting back against this, realizing that the collective shout group is not a large group. Supposedly got this action through just like 1,000 people calling the payment processors about this stuff. So people have been working in the opposite direction, calling MasterCard, Visa, Stripe, PayPal about this stuff and just trying to bring up their concerns in a nice manner, but also wasting time as much as they can. They cover somebody here that estimated his first call lasted about 18 minutes and ended with him lodging a formal complaint in the wrong department. He called back 2 more times, assured in each case that his frustrations with MasterCard. His payment system he uses through PayPal to buy games from Valve were being recorded as part of his file in the company's system. So yeah, they've been fully aware of what's going on, the reps working there at all these companies. So yeah, I mentioned, let's see. Yeah, there's people on Blue Sky organizing all this stuff. So if you need your call list, phone numbers to call, and scripts, ideas, and all that kind of stuff for what to talk about, all that kind of stuff, that's definitely a thing to do. Because, they very much are recognizing this. We'll talk about exactly how they respond to it, but...
Yeah, and it's going to get really interesting because there's going to be this a lot of finger pointing that's going to go on after the fact.
Yeah.
Where like all the the card holder companies are like, no, it wasn't our idea, it was their idea.
Yeah.
That type of shit. So I mean, what I think is really hilarious about this is, do you remember the thing that happened on, I think it was the thing that happened on Pornhub a couple years back, where this one group managed to scare like the owners of Pornhub so much that they ended up just straight up site-wide banned all of their independent and amateur creators and basically forced all of them to re-register. That happened with a group, I think they were called Exodus International or something like that. And it didn't really work. Like, the whole thing just kind of bounced back because it caused so much of a furor that it ultimately... the only thing it ended up doing is it ended up like taking a lot of amateur and independent creators off of Pornhub and just made them go over to OnlyFans and Fansly. This is basically going to have just the same effect.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they aren't really going to accomplish anything. The worst that they're going to do is just either make a new platform come into existence, or it's going to be like a small inconvenience for a couple of months.
Yeah.
That's about the extent of it.
Yeah.
And I think and keep in mind, I want to make this clear. Collective Shout masks itself in the guise of feminism, but it is very much not a feminist organization. It is very much like an evangelical Christian group from Australia. And from what it's being suggested, they're not even really that big. It's just that they found the secret formula to sort of gaslight all of these payment processors into freaking out. And now the illusion is slowly clearing, and the payment processors are starting to realize that they kind of made a huge mistake here. And they're going to have to, it's going to take a while to fix the damage, but it will eventually.
Yeah, we'll see. So yeah, Itch's first like big reworking of things for what they're going to do with all this is that they have re-indexed all the free adult games, ones that don't have to run through a payment processor. With that, and they are working on finding a payment processor that could deal with the not safe work games that are charging for it, which has me wondering if they would be able to allow more of these games to change to being free to kind of get around that. We'll see. But yeah, that's at least a decent solution for the short term. We'll see. But yeah, that is their whole thing. Yeah, because I believe all four of those companies, MasterCard, Visa, Stripe, and PayPal, all have policies against supporting this kind of content, even if they try to frame it as being worse than it actually is.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a fun whole thing here. Yeah, like Stripe. That has worked with Itch for at least a decade. Have said that they, quote, will not be able to take payments for content designed for sexual gratification. Just like, boy, that's a policy to have on the internet. Where that's a lot of things that people do. So yeah, we'll see what's going on here, but the stuff is still evolving, and yeah, we ended up getting a public statement out of MasterCard that for them tries to claim they haven't done anything here. They haven't made any requests. Yeah, here it is. Let's see. MasterCard has not evaluated any game or required restrictions of any activity on game creator sites and platforms, contrary to media reports and allegations. Our payment network follows standards based on the rule of law. But simply, we allow all lawful purchases on our network. At the same time, we require merchants to have appropriate controls to ensure MasterCard cards cannot be used for unlawful purchases, including illegal adult content. And it's like that last paragraph there is the certainly holding a lot more weight than it should. Because, yeah, none of these games really are illegal.
No.
Anyway, maybe in certain jurisdictions, but that there's ways to deal with that. But yeah, saying that they only allow lawful purchases on our network, it's like, boy, that's not what's going on here. And also saying that, you know, we haven't made any requests to restrict, you know, game stuff on any of these sites or platforms is like, boy, you sure may not have made specific requests, but you certainly scare the shit out of them of losing a ton of business if they don't follow your guidelines with all that. So yeah, which definitely does not ring true and definitely feels like it's a bad idea for making this kind of statement, because it makes it a more real thing for the general audience that has maybe heard about this stuff happening, but it being on games that they would never consider checking out, that it would be no major issue. Putting this out makes it a much bigger thing and kind of very much puts a target directly on MasterCard's back for this. I believe Valve has said that while MasterCard did not communicate with it directly, concerns did come through payment processor and banking intermediaries. They said payment processors rejected Valve's current guidelines for moderating illegal content on Steam, citing MasterCard's rule 5.12.7. Valve statement here. MasterCard did not communicate with Valve directly, despite a request to do so. MasterCard communicated with payment processors and their acquiring banks. Payment processors communicated this with Valve, and we replied by outlining Steam's policy since 2018 of attempting to distribute games that are legal for distribution. Payment processors rejected this and specifically cited MasterCard's rule 5.12.7 and risk to the MasterCard brand. Which is like, boy, I don't know that anybody pays attention to the MasterCard brand for that reason. That's a very silly way to go about things. That rule specifically states a merchant must not submit to its acquirer and a customer must not submit to the interchange system any transaction that is illegal or in sole discretion of the corporation may damage the goodwill of the corporation or reflect negatively on the marks. It also adds here the sale of a product or service, including an image, which is patently offensive and lacks serious artistic value, such as, by way of example and not limitation, images of non-consensual sexual behavior, sexual exploitation of a minor, non-consensual mutilation of a body or body part, and bestiality, or any other material that the corporation deems unacceptable to sell in connection with a mark. Violations of this rule can result in fines, audits, or companies by the payment processors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, that's a very broad rule.
Yep.
Especially in terms of games where it's like non-consensual mutilation of a person or body part could essentially mean any action game with blood and gore could be taken down, which I don't think they would ever really require that. It's like this other stuff doesn't seem like a thing that is a part of these games, but there could be aspects of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think in the way of, you know, essentially what they're saying, rape and that kind of stuff. I don't know, but yeah, that's very much like flying in the face of their, like, we haven't, you know, made any requests of this. And it's like, it seems like your lackeys that are intermediaries between, you know, Valve and yourself are making these requests on behalf of you.
Yeah.
Are doing that.
Yeah, which means might need to have a bit of an inquiry and what one hand is telling the other, buddy.
And it's like, who are these, you know, people or companies or whatever that is, how that works. Like, are they evangelicals here essentially working on behalf of Collective Shout, the sort of the people, the insiders that they have some access to that are able to pull these strings in a way that MasterCard certainly doesn't want to be seen as the company bowing down to that kind of pressure, but I don't know. Maybe they are okay with that. But yeah, as we know, this continuing unabated would be very bad and obviously would lead to a slippery slope of banning any sort of content with queer themes to it. Any kind of sex, which could go all the way to your God of Wars and all that kind of stuff. Not a great place you want to go if you don't stop it here.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. But the way it's looking, you know, so far, it's looking like this is going to be a bit of a headache, but it's temporary, and it's going to be a, you know, another blip on the radar in about a year or so. So it's just infuriating because, you know, it's part of, like, you know, because we're also having to deal with, like, the upcoming, like, you know, the age restriction laws that are coming into effect for, you know, social media and everything. So it's all just kind of coming to a head.
Yeah.
But, you know, I am confident that it will, you know, it will work itself out. But it is infuriating that there really are just this small group of people who were so convinced of their own, you know, specialness that they thought they had to essentially impose themselves on every other human being on the planet.
Yeah. And that's fun.
Yeah.
To deal with. So yeah, that's gonna do it for the main news part of the show. We'll get to the partner direct, whatever you want to call it here. That's seemed like an alright show, but also I would say before we get into anything else here, it seemed to show exactly the kind of dire third party situation on the Switch 2 right now.
Yep.
Where you're not getting a ton of new experiences. This is a lot of like, hey, you see those games that are coming out everywhere else? We're also getting those. Which is cool, but also not interesting for a direct like this for people like me. Where it's like, alright, there's interesting games here, but I would play them elsewhere.
Yeah.
Instead of my Switch 2. So yeah, let's start running down here, and we'll have a few that I've removed because they're already covered elsewhere. You know, no real new news. We would start off with a new game from Capcom, Monster Hunter Stories 3, Twisted Reflection. A new game in there, like monster collecting RPG series. Yeah, which looks pretty nice. Also coming to PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC next year. So yeah, Switch 2 is not going to be the only place for this, like it was for the first few games. So
yeah,
you'll be able to check it out. And yeah, it looks like they've done a good job upgrading this for, you know, a modern console looking thing. So yeah, it's got that anime look to it. I was like, oh, if you told me this was a Genshin Impact game, I'd have believed it. About the Capcom logo there, but let's see. Then we got a new Katamari game, Once Upon a Katamari, that's coming to PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. I find it funny that it's only coming to the Switch and not the Switch 2. They made a big deal of having different logos on the game pages in the direct. So like, oh, if it has this one, it's a Switch 1. If it has this one, it's a Switch 2. And if it has both, it's coming to both. And I was like, okay, yeah, this Once Upon a Katamari, it's a new one of these. Yeah, the first new entry in 14 years since, I believe, the Vita game. So it's got a bunch of new stages and music and all that. Yeah, you can sort of have a new customization system for the prince or any of his cousins. There's 69 of them. Just in case you need to know. But you can swap out parts to make them look the way you want. So yeah, that looks neat. I'm always interested in more Katamari. This looks like it has less gimmicks to it, so that looks like it'll be fun. That's out October 24th. Then it shut off new Just Dance 2026 edition for October 14th. That's on everything. Let's see, Dragon Ball Sparking Zero is coming to the Switch and Switch 2 on November 14th.
Yep.
It's a free upgrade, so you get one, you get the other, and all that, so that's nice. I'm sure it won't run super well, but you'll be able to check it out. Then we got a game that's been rumored for a while, Plants vs. Zombies Planted. It's a new like 4K HD version of Plants vs. Zombies. It's kind of funny that the way they kind of extend the The screen for a 4K system is that they just put a bunch of bushes at the end of the yard, which doesn't make sense on the day mode because that was where the street was. That's the whole premise.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise, that's really about it. That's really changed here. Mm. Looks nicer, all the same music, all the same content and all that. I'm excited for that. That original game was one of my favorites, so
mm-hmm.
always up for more of that.
Yep.
That'll be out October 23rd for $20 on all these platforms. So yeah, it's everything. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, PC, all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got more EA. They showed off FC 26 for the Switch, Switch 2.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly looks better than it did on the first Switch. It's out September 26th. You can check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got news that Bandai Namco is doing more Pac-Man World remastering as they announced Pac-Man World 2 repack.
Mm-hmm.
That's on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, Switch 2, and PC. On September 26th, found it funny they announced two games for the same day, right next to each other. Not even giving them a little breathing room in this showcase. So there's that. But as we said about the first game, these are fine.
Mm-hmm.
They're not amazing games or anything, but probably perfect for kids who need something to play.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So yeah, there's that. Then they showed off Final Fantasy Tactics again because that collection's coming out September 30th. But we already knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting a Switch 2 version of Persona 3 Reload on October 23rd. So you can enjoy that. Let's see, $60. They got physical and digital. You get a digital deluxe edition for $70. Mm-hmm. Comes with a digital art book and soundtrack.
Yep.
Then a digital premium edition that's $90.
Mm-hmm.
That includes the all the DLC.
Yep. Yeah, like you know, like I played and reviewed this, and you know, it's still a really good and solid Persona game. It's just, you know, it feels, having it, you know, updated like this with like modern graphics and everything, it still somehow feels, you know, less dense than the games that would come after, because, you know, Persona 4 would come out immediately after this and it would essentially bury this game in just sheer popularity, not to mention like the amount of stuff you could do in that game compared to what Persona 3 you could do. But it's still definitely a great game.
Yeah. This digital premium edition doesn't include the expansion stuff,
mm-hmm.
which I forgot that was also a thing in the other versions that people were annoyed about.
Mm-hmm.
So if you spend $90 on this game, you don't get the expansion content. You have to spend another $35 on that.
Yep.
So yeah, that's, I'm not surprised, but I'm also surprised they don't just offer a big bundle here. Maybe they will at some point, but they know what their audience will do.
Yep.
So yeah. Then we got to see more of Hyrule Warriors Imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
That still doesn't have a date. I believe it's supposed to be sometime this winter. So it could be the end of the year or early next year. But yeah, this, the Hyrule Warriors, that's set in the past in Tears of the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So you're dealing with you know, semi-spoilers, Princess Zelda being transported back to the past and the history of Hyrule. Dealing with all that stuff. So, yeah. And I believe they tease a potential way for Link to be involved in this, even though he's technically not in the past, alongside Zelda. But, yeah. We'll see more of that and get a date at some point. But there you go for that. That's your one bit of Nintendo stuff here. Yeah, then they show off some Madden, which doesn't look as good as the other versions, but will still be pretty playable on August 1st, 14th. Then we got an indie game in here from Oink Games. Oink Games, yeah. which they primarily make tabletop games, but has made some Switch stuff in the past. They announced Chillin' by the Fire. It's actually like a neat little campfire simulation kind of game. Where you can kind of hang out with friends and use the camera stuff to show your mugs while you're hanging out and chilling. And they mentioned there's like enough detail to the fire simulation that you have to, you know, set your wet logs sort of outside the fire so they dry out first. And try to keep the fire going. And you get like XP out of this, they mention. So yeah, got some neat stuff that's available now. I believe it's $15 for that. Let's see. Then Apex Legends got announced for Switch 2 on August 5th. Because yeah, that original game did not run well on the Switch. So this is not a huge surprise that they're doing it again on the Switch 2. So it should run a lot better. For that, so there you go. Then we got Hella, which is a game that I guess got announced a little while ago, but they essentially announced a Switch 2 version here, but it's also coming to PS5, Xbox, and PC next year. Yeah, this is based on a Scandinavian folklore open world adventure game, so has a really nice look to it and really nice kind of vibes to it, so looking forward to that. Star Wars Outlaws is coming to Switch 2 on September 4th. Should hopefully be a better game than what originally launched on the PS5 and Xbox and PC last year. That'll be one benefit there. Let's see. Then we got to see more Chronos the New Dawn, the new game from Blooper Studio. Sort of their next game after making the Silent Hill 2 remake, which looks pretty nice. This is on everything, PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC. It'll be out September 5th. Check that out. $60 for the regular edition, $70 for the deluxe edition. That includes 2 days of early access on every platform except the Switch 2. So I guess the Switch 2 doesn't necessarily support early access in that way, at least not yet. But yeah, they also have a physical edition if you want that. But yeah. There you go. Then they got Yakuza Kiwami 1 and 2 coming to the Switch 2. As they keep the Yakuza stuff going. November 13th, both of them will be out. I guess the first Kiwami has been out on the Switch 1, so that's a free upgrade for the Switch 2. But yeah. Same games. Otherwise, so there you go for that. Then we got a newish game here called Good Night Universe. Yeah, that is coming to Switch, Switch 2, PS5, and Xbox, and PC on November 11th. This is a spiritual successor to Before Your Eyes. Same studio that made that game, which was a neat one. So yeah, these are new ones and more fun stuff to do. So, then we got a little bit of a surprise here with NBA Bounce. It's a new NBA game from Outright Games. That seems to feature cutesy versions of players and the mascots playing this. So I think it's generally like a kids focused game. For that, so yeah, that's on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. That'll be out September 26th. Then announced an expansion for Hello Kitty Island Adventure, Wheat Flower Wonderland. So that's PS5, Switch, and PC for sometime this fall. Then they announced Romancing Saga 2, Revenge of the Seven, Nintendo Switch 2 Edition. A free upgrade, I believe, for that that's been on the Switch for a while. Now, or no, $10 for the upgrade. Yeah, it goes out alongside a new update. I'm not sure what this is doing exactly, other than probably better and looking a bit better. But yeah, so yeah, there you go. That's another saga game you can play.
Yeah.
Then we got Shinobi Art of Vengeance.
Yeah, this is one of those titles that's been, I've noticed has been getting some attention right now.
Yeah, especially because the demo came out alongside this showcase, so you could check it out on any platform. I wish it would be on everything. Yeah, and that game's out August 29th. We already knew that, but the demo's kind of the new thing here. People can check that out. Then we ended this with two Square Enix games. It's funny seeing people that were co-streaming this and then watching the first trailer here. And it's like, oh, this is Octopath Traveler, obviously. And then found out it's a new game called The Adventures of Elliot, The Millennium Tales. Essentially them making what they're calling an action RPG in the HT 2D style. The demo is out now on the Switch 2 that they're planning to do a survey afterwards, sort of like what they've done for some of the other games in this style from Square Enix. Yeah, I played a bit of this, and yeah, it's interesting. The RPG aspect of this, I don't think exists in this game. At least not in the demo. There's no experience you get or anything. It's more Zelda style. Where you get where you start off with, I think, three weapons. You have a bow, you have a sword, and you have bombs you can drop. And enemies and grass and such will drop more arrows and bombs as you go. The bow doesn't really quite work well for me because it's a very precise weapon. You don't have like a freedom of aiming that thing. But the sword has a Zelda style like beam you shoot out of it across the screen. And you can aim that in kind of eight directions. Depending on how good you are at aiming it, you can take out enemies from a distance pretty well and like kill them with that. But you don't lose it if you take damage either. It's just a core part of that. It's the charge attack for that sword. But where I'm at, a little ways in, I got another weapon that is like a, almost like a, not a whip, but it's almost got like a an axe-like thing on the end of it. So you can kind of swing that around and just kind of hold it to keep doing that. It'll cut up the grass as you're walking through it and destroy jars and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it and you're basically exploring this overworld and going to these little dungeons and such. Some just give you more health. It doesn't do the four pieces of the heart thing. So far I've done two of them that mostly show you how different mechanics work. And you get an extra bit of health for your bar, which here is like a tier shape. Which can break into halves, I think. And yeah, you can spend the one of the currencies on getting these. I don't know what they call. I forget what they call them, but they're essentially gems that are bonus stat stuff. Where it's like, oh, your damage with the sword is +2, or your reach is, you know, have 100% extra reach, that kind of stuff. Some of them are have like a positive thing and a negative thing to it. And you have a certain amount of points to equip as many of these as you want. And the point where I'm at, they just introduced the notion that you can do essentially sets of these to swap between. So if you have different weapons you want to use in certain situations and have the those gems slotted in for that, you can do that. There's a little bit of platforming to this and all that. And yeah, it's definitely good. This is an RPG because you'd be able to grind out levels pretty fast because enemies respawn in the open world and all that pretty easily. But yeah, I've been, you can have a fairy with you as well who you can use for different things. Right, Matt, there's a sprint spell that she has, and then there's a warp spell you can essentially move her around with the right stick, and if you get her over a gap, you can warp over and sort of skip it that way. She can also attack enemies. You can also have her hang out, hide or stop where she's at. I don't know why you want her to stop, but yeah, there's options here. But yeah, it seems pretty solid. I don't know if this is going to turn into a great game, but it's very much a grindy game from what I've played so far. Gone through a few different dungeons and nothing really too complicated, but some of the dungeons can be. The one I went through had a bunch of little portals, essentially, sort of like a sand pit you could fall into and go down to the level below. And like trying to figure out the precise route I needed to go through to progress took a bit of time, but the boss fight ended up being pretty easy because I just needed to bomb it a couple times to break its shield, mm-hmm. and then was able to kill it pretty quickly after that. It does have options for difficulty stuff, but I don't remember if you could adjust that in the demo. Mm-hmm. There are definitely things that are off limits, especially some that are based on graphic stuff. So, but yeah, that seems neat. If you want to see like a more action-y game in this style, and that's coming to PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC next year. So there's that. And then they ended on Octopath Traveler Zero, essentially a prequel to the other games. That also has some tie-in to the mobile game. If you go to the game's official page, you can see them be like, yeah, we're taking some elements of the mobile game, because that was also a prequel thing, but they're doing different things with it. I don't know specifically. I haven't played much of the mobile game, so I don't know. But I believe also if you have saves from the other Square Enix stuff from this part of Square Enix, like it's the other two travel, the Octopath Travelers, and I forget what other games specifically. If you have saves from those, you'll get bonus items. It's doing some of that stuff. I think there might be a screen here that explains it, because there's 1,000 screens on this page. Of course. There it is. Yeah, if you have save data from Octopath Traveler 1 and 2, you get some statue stuff, because like the core conceit of this game seems to be like you're building up your village, almost in a Dark Cloud style. But I don't think there's as much of a puzzle element to it. They're also taking bonuses you get from having Dragon Quest 1 and 2 HD 2D Remake, Dragon Quest 3 HD 2D Remake, and Bravely Default Flying Fairy HD Remaster. So there's some of that stuff. Yeah, that's out December 4th, so right near the end of the year. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and Switch 2 and PC available. They have a $230 collector's edition for this. So if you want to spend a shitload of money on this game, you can do that. Let's see, it includes a ring of the Flamebringer, Japanese ring size 21. There's 8-sided dice of wealth, power, and fame. Playing cards. There's a continent map. Gaming mat. Okay. An arrangement CD. An art booklet. Digital Deluxe upgrade code. And if you pre-order, you also receive the Travel Precision set, which is all a bunch of extra potions and shit. So. Yeah, that looks neat. I'm not going to say it's going to be like the most amazing Octopath Traveler game, better than the other two, but looks neat. For more of that. So, yeah. There you go. That's your showcase. Anything here that's particularly interested you, Brandon?
The Shinobi one kind of does. But honestly, not terribly much.
Yeah,
it's honestly the third party stuff's kind of weak right now.
Yeah, for me, it's like Once Upon a Katamari and Plants vs. Mm-hmm. Zombies, which
yeah,
is like, yeah, but I'm not going to play them on Switch or Switch 2. Mm-hmm. Maybe Plants vs. Zombies I'll get later,
mm-hmm.
just to have it on everything, but mm-hmm. for now, that's kind of where I'm at, and otherwise, nothing else here that I'm going to play on a Switch 2. Maybe I'll play Hella next year, but
mm-hmm.
that's also far enough away. Doesn't really count as a game that's coming to the Switch 2
mm-hmm.
just yet. Yeah, maybe Octopath Traveler 0, but I also need to play more of the first two.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, after playing the Adventures of Elliot demo, I was like, I need to download Octopath Traveler again. Make sure I have it on the Switch 2 here. Because like I played a bunch of that and stopped because it's a very tedious kind of framework that game has.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just playing chapters of these different characters.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch, so yeah. Like, yeah, not much here, not much that shows that there's this, you know,
mm-hmm.
a huge third-party presence here and nobody's making anything exclusive, really.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Nintendo's paying them to. Because, yeah, I think the only things that are exclusive here is Chill by the Fire.
Mm-hmm.
That might be it. Hyrule Warriors, but Nintendo's publishing that, so it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really count on that. Yeah, that seems to be it. So, yeah, it's like, yeah, not much here that's only going to be on your Switch 2 that's going to justify, especially for a lot of these games, are ones that are going to be very large file sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Going to take up a lot of space on your Switch 2.
Mm.
And I don't know that any of these are all that worth that space. But yeah. Mm. That'll be up to the individual person, but for me,
mm-hmm.
this sort of shows, like, don't expect a ton of amazing exclusives anytime soon for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
That aren't coming from Nintendo.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think that's going to end up doing it for the show this week, unless you got anything to add.
Nope.
All right. Yeah. So thank you all for tuning in, and thank you to Brandon for joining this week.
Always.
Hopefully we'll have Dan Rip back for next week's show. Mm-hmm. As the releases kind of continue on. I'm going to double check here what we got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that Demon Slayer game's out this week. Turbo Kid, Gradius Origins, The House of the Dead 2 remake, and Ritual Raven. And Mafia, the Old Country. So some neat stuff out this week. But yeah, if you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out, and select strangers that are also tired of payment processors being assholes. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.